White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 419.
I'm Weather Channel meteorologist Reynolds Wolf, and you are listening to Almost Credible Discussion of the Auburn Tigers with the AU Wishbone.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
War Eagle.
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Now everybody, come on everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, now 91 strong and growing via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we haven't been able to say this in a very long time. In fact, I think this is the first time you and I on this show have ever been able to say this. This is Florida week.
Yes.
We've never been able to say that before. Our show started in 2012. Isn't that crazy?
So we wrote something for... Did we write something in 2011?
Probably.
Yes.
But
yes, we did. For the War Eagle Reader. But we have not talked about a Florida game on the podcast, and I'm excited.
Yeah, it's so crazy. The last time we played Florida was 2011 when Will Muschamp was their coach, and they came into Jordan-Hare, and we had... Barrett Trotter, quarterback, and Mike Dyer, and somebody told me D'Angelo Benton, so I guess that was our receiver, the number three, the guy from Louisiana, and we went up against Florida, and I think we beat them, it was like 17-6 or something. It was the least memorable Auburn-Florida game ever. It seems like the Auburn-Florida games are always memorable, you know, but this one was just very blah. I talked about it on our special Auburn Florida show for the patrons that we did yesterday. And by the way, don't worry, folks. I've already loaded it into Podbean, and it will go live for everybody else around midnight Wednesday night, Thursday morning. So you guys get to hear it at the end of the week. I don't want it competing on iTunes with this show, you know, and splitting our listenership in half. But it'll go up. Our Auburn Florida rivalry show will go up for everybody Wednesday night, Thursday morning. But on the show we recorded last night about it, we talked about that and how it's just that game. Somebody even said, I don't even remember that game being played. I watched it in a bar in a hotel at a convention I was at. So you don't remember much about it either, right?
No, it's funny. Like there's so many great Florida Auburn games that I have very distinct memories of, and that one's kind of like, yeah. I remember Will Muschamp in like a sweaty Florida shirt.
Yeah. You know, about the only thing that really stands out for me is, although this may have been in 2015 that he said this, or by that time it may not have been true anymore, but I remember Muschamp either during this game or in 15 when he came back as our defensive coordinator for a while. One of those times he said it was hard to recruit to Florida because their facilities were so bad compared to Auburn's. Do you remember that?
I don't remember when that was.
Yeah, but I remember him saying that Florida, just their facilities were not very good. Their stadium's nice, but they hadn't really upgraded like their weight room and their, you know, the nutrition area and all that. So he was jealous of what we had, and I don't think that's true so much anymore while we're building the new complex, hopefully.
I think you're right. I don't think Florida's in the same place.
Yeah. A lot changes in a very short time in the SEC in terms of infrastructure and the arms race. So we had a big game Saturday night, And I enjoyed it tremendously. What about you?
We joked last week about why do they make it so tense?
Yeah.
And that didn't happen this week. We jumped in them with both feet, and it was a wonderful feeling to have a game, especially, I'm sure, for the home fans, a game against an SEC opponent where we took firm control of the game and kind of ran away with it and made it fun and dynamic and entertaining, and but not a, you know, a tense kind of gut through the ringer experience.
Yeah. You know, either Sun Tzu or Patton or one of those guys, pretty much the same guy, you know, famously said, no battle plan long survives first contact with the enemy. And Mike Tyson had a corollary on that where he said, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face, and which is essentially the same thing. And I thought, if Mississippi State had a plan for this game, they got punched in the face in the first 10 seconds. And I have no idea what that plan might have been because we never saw it. They were pretty much in desperation mode for 59 minutes of that game, you know?
No, that's a good point. Like, I think they were on their heels and being pushed backward, and we never really got to see what they were going to try to do.
Yeah. Now, I have a question for you. I'm told that Florida's defense is the best one we've played all year, and this, that, and the other. My question is, every game we play, I'm told, well, you know, that team we played before, they were supposed to be good at this and that and the other, but I guess they really weren't since Auburn beat their brains in. So, but now this next team, they're really the one that's going to challenge Auburn, you know. Now, forget what we said last week and the week before and the week before. This is the team that's – and we hear this every week, you know. So is Texas A&M – and then what we saw with Texas A&M playing Arkansas, is Texas A&M – really not what we thought they were, and we're getting overinflated ego from it? Is Mississippi State not what we thought they were, and we're getting overinflated ego from it? Or can we take honest conclusions? Can we draw honest conclusions from what we've seen so far? Does that make sense?
I think we can take – yes, that's a fair question. I think you could take honest conclusions from what we've seen. I mean, here's the other part. We know – from watching Auburn play, how well or how poorly Auburn has played in these games, right?
Yeah.
And what has worked and not worked, and what we're good at and what we're not good at. And it is, for people who, like us, who have watched all these games, it is easy, for example, to see that this Auburn football team is much better than they were, you know, Labor Day weekend against Oregon. They have improved.
Oh, yeah.
They have gotten better at a lot of things. And not just, you know, they're playing better and more confident together, but they have figured out things they do well, and they're, you know, doing those things. So I think that's one thing on its own. Like, you can evaluate Auburn and its progression and what it's doing outside of what the other team is doing. But I also think, like, you know, you don't get hung up about what's going on with other teams and how they play and that kind of stuff. The Texas A&M Arkansas game is always like that because it's always like that. It has literally been a one score Texas A&M win for 5 years in a row. It doesn't matter how good the two teams are relative to one another. That's how that game is going to end.
Yeah.
So I get it, what you're saying, and part of it is that, you know, there's always some new challenge coming down the road for this team because that's how it is. But I do think more than any team in the country, Auburn has played good teams and beaten them and exceeded expectations in doing so. So I think you know, the team's in a good place, and we had a great home win the other night where we – saw a lot of that progress kind of come to fruition, and we saw trends based on, you know, us seeing other Gus teams in the past and how they developed. We saw, you know, signs indicating that this team is on a good, you know, trend upward. Basically, this isn't as that the Mississippi State game the other night isn't as good as this team can be. That was kind of this team saying, like, yeah, we can do this, whatever. Here's all the things that we can kind of do. But it's also like we know they can, that this team can play better than that even.
You know, speaking of all that, I want to mention something about the schedule. I think that in, you know, we talked about, and not just us, all anybody's talked about our schedule over the last few months has been how challenging, right, it is, right? It's such a tough schedule. That's pretty much all we've said about it. But looking at it now and with the admission and the understanding that we have to play it, it is what it is, right? I mean, to quote Nick Saban's favorite quote, it is what it is. There's nothing we can do about it. So once you set aside the fact that it is very challenging, okay, that's a given. We understand that. When you look at it so far, it really has set up about as well as it could for helping our team, and particularly the offense and the special teams, wouldn't you say? I mean, think about it like this. Oregon is a good team, and it's tough to open with a team like that, particularly when you're not at home. But they were just challenging enough to push us to the very limit. They pushed an Auburn team that was raw to the very limit. They pushed an Auburn team that pretty much had to rely on athleticism and some clever play calls and stuff because we were not a well-oiled machine in that game, right? Nobody, particularly on offense, would say that we were a well-oiled machine. We leaned on our defense, and we overcame our special teams issues, and we were able to generate just enough offense to win that game. So once you got that one in your pocket, then you go and play, I guess, Tulane. And that one was good because it showed us some things we need to do with the run game, yet we could still win. Then we played Kent State, and that showed us some deficiencies we had in some various areas, but it let us kind of build on what we learned the first 2 weeks. Then we go to Texas A&M, and we really gain some confidence, and we really get the offense cooking. Then we come home from Mississippi State, and we're just a bulldozer, you know. And so it seems to me that the schedule so far, now we go to Florida, which is the best, maybe in some ways the biggest challenge to date on the road. It just seems like as tough as the schedule is, it has so far set up in a way that has worked to better the team.
I think that's really good, true, and a really good point. I think, yes, the schedule has been tough, but it's been a tough that wasn't like we're playing a bunch of like teams that are like 100, you know, like
right,
like 100th best team in the country, 100th best team in the country, and then we're playing like the second best team in the country. You know, we played some good teams. We played a very good team or neutral site. We played a couple of okay teams at home, and then we played a really good team away from home. And I think all those things have made this team better.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, you're right in the sense that they've enabled us to have this kind of growth curve that we're seeing now with Auburn, where we wouldn't know anything about Auburn if we had played a bunch of cupcakes and nobody should.
And let me tell you something.
And the team wouldn't have been able to push against those and learn from those experiences to get better.
Right. No, absolutely. And let me tell you something that I haven't heard anybody else make note of. I have not. I mean, maybe everybody's talking about it. I just haven't heard it. But I haven't heard anybody else mention this. Every other year, other than maybe 2013 and a little bit of 14, but even in 14 when we were struggling, every other year in the Malzahn era, where have we had trouble scoring? In red zone. Yeah. We rock and roll from our 25 down to their 20, and then we end up kicking field goals, right? I mean, that's what kind of did us in 2014, that and the defense collapsing. And then in most of our years, we get down the red zone and we end up kicking field goals. This year, we haven't even attempted a field goal in like two games. We haven't even had to. We are scoring touchdowns. The offense is finding all kind of creative ways not only to move the ball in general, but to put the ball in the dang end zone. And that's something I think we're taking for granted, and we need to take a moment and say, hey, we're putting the ball in the end zone when we get in, and not even just from scoring position. In other words, we used to have trouble scoring from third base, so to speak. We're finding ways to put the ball in the end zone from first base, from second base, from home plate. You know what I mean? We're putting the ball in the end zone from all over the field now.
That's good. When you said that, I went and looked it up. 21 of 24 in the red zone this season. So, and our TD percentage is 70%, which is, you know, pretty high. I'm going to look at it for some other years.
What would those numbers be if you took the Oregon game out? Because we missed a couple, we missed a field goal, right? We ended up kicking two field goals. If you took that first game out and just started after we started getting better, if you look just at Tulane, Kent State, Texas A&M, and Mississippi State, I bet our red zone percentage is like 90 at least. And we haven't failed to score because we haven't missed a field goal since the first game. We haven't even tried one the last two games. I don't think that's being noticed yet. We haven't failed to score in the red zone, I don't think, in the last two or three games at all.
No, I think you're right.
Because we haven't missed a field goal since Oregon, and we haven't attempted one since Kent State.
Did we have a red zone turnover in one of those games, like the Kent State game maybe?
Maybe so, yeah. But other than that, we must be in the 90s percentage-wise now. I think most of what's keeping our numbers down right now is Oregon, where we were still kind of struggling a little bit. Now, part of that was Oregon. Give them credit. You know, they're good. But I'm just saying, since then, we've played other good teams, and we haven't had any problems. So, what do you think about – you have a note here about angry Gus and the players wanting revenge, and I thought that was interesting. I heard Gus say in the post-game show, in the football review with Andy Burcham, I heard Gus say he actually put together a film clip of last year's game and showed it to the team because they should be, you know, embarrassed about how Mississippi State pushed us around on both sides of the ball. And he says, I very rarely do that. But this game, I mean, you know, we were concerned that it was a trap game. We were concerned that it was a look ahead, you know, one of those things. And I don't think that
let down look ahead sandwich.
I don't think that the team or the coaches thought of it that way.
It's a trap.
No, I don't think they thought of it that way at all.
See, I disagree. I think the coaches 100% thought that way, and that's why he made
yeah.
that take.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm saying I don't think that they fell for that. I think that I think you're exactly right. No, they were very cognizant of that. And they prepared for it.
Yes, exactly right. And this is where, like, I think we've given Gus a lot of credit this season for the play calling and the offense and that kind of stuff. But I think in the bigger picture, kind of the team management psychology part, I think he did a great job in the last 7 days.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're coming off a win over a good Texas A&M team on the road. Everybody felt good. Everybody was in a good place. We had this gigantic game with Florida looming on the horizon that everybody knew was going to be a huge thing. It would have been easy to overlook playing Mississippi State at home. And instead, we had angry Gus at the press conference going on and on about how they kicked our ass last year and embarrassed us, and the coaches are embarrassed, and the players should be embarrassed too. And he showed him that video like you're talking about. And I think everybody got the message, and that's one of the reasons they came out and were completely focused and ready to kick Mississippi State's ass in this game.
Absolutely. I said on Twitter as soon as the game started, I said, our boys are breathing fire tonight. They were. They were fired up. And here's the interesting thing too, right? They took care of business at Texas A&M, and then they really did refocus fantastically for Mississippi State. Losing last year may be the best thing that could have happened to us because, honestly, it didn't matter that much in the grand scheme of things. We lost Mississippi State last year, but it sure helped us this year with it, so I'll take it, you know. In fact, if we had beaten Mississippi State last year, we'd have still had a crappy record, and we might not have been in Nashville. I wouldn't have gotten to go to the bowl game. So I'll take it the way it lays, okay? It helped us this year, and that's what matters right now. Now, as soon as this game was over, though, you think they're sitting around congratulating themselves? They were already talking about Florida in the locker room after the Mississippi State game. They're already gearing up for Florida. I mean, that's what I want to see. It's like dominoes falling. We're just to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. I love it. The focus. This team is focused.
Yes. Man. That was the word for Saturday night. They came out very focused on the situation at hand, the team, the opponent they were playing, and not thinking about what lay ahead down the road. And that's the way we got to take it.
Yeah. I mean, we may go down and get blown out by Florida. Who knows? But I feel like we're doing everything we can to be ready, and I feel like, you know, even if we lose, I feel like they're doing everything they can to be ready. You know what I mean? They seem that way.
Yes. The team is being well prepared. You are correct.
Yeah. So this I'm going to say this, and you can laugh, or you can say slow down, hold your horses. This team reminds me more than any of the teams since then of 2013. Now that may mean we go get killed at LSU, you know, because that team did. But and that's fine.
It was a monsoon then.
Yeah, it was, and monsoon. What's his name? The running back too just rolled over us. But geez, but this team has that feel, that business-like approach, getting better every week, focused on what they need to be focusing on, taking care of business. That's the way it comes across to me now. And also, I've heard Brandon and several others talk about how Gus just seems like a different person this year. I saw that Feinbaum said he didn't even recognize Gus. Didn't even seem like the same person. What do you read from that in terms of Gus just being much more, I don't know, is it personable or is it focused or is it angry or what do you call it?
He has changed his behavior. And we talked about this a little bit in the preseason. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think this kind of thing happens by accident or by Gus just waking up one day and saying I'm going to be different. I don't think human beings work that way.
No.
I think that he has been talking to somebody, you know, maybe it's somebody, another coach, maybe it's some kind of executive coach, maybe it's a psychologist, whatever. I think he has been talking to somebody and they have told him, you know, the team and the Auburn fans and the public, whatever, need to see more of this other side of you. You can't keep it all walled off. And, you know, you need to, you know, let yourself be yourself, basically. Be comfortable in who you are. And just kind of go with it. You're running the offense. It's your show. It's your team. Go be yourself. And I think he's really done that this year. I think before he's really tried to come across as very, you know, kind of cold and dry and robotic. And I think he's having fun. Mm-hmm. I think he's being more honest and open. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, more transparency, more media being allowed into their practice sessions before in training camp and that kind of stuff. But I also think, like, when he's angry, he's telling people about it. I think you see him holding players accountable. Mm-hmm. When he's unhappy with their performance. You saw that at the A&M game when he was yelling at people. So I do think he is different. And I think the key to unlock all of that was him taking control back of the offense, right?
Yeah.
Because that is fundamental to his idea of who he is as a person, is that he needs to have that control to have that feeling of control in his life, basically. If he's not running the offense for the team that he's coaching, then he doesn't feel that he's in control of his life, I think. This is just my amateur psychology, but he is a different person now, and I think he has a confidence and a belief in what he does and the way he does it. And I think he's also very, you know, I think he has assembled a coaching staff that is really good for him and for this team. We got to give him credit. I mean, I think the Carnell hire and the Dillingham hire are clearly working out with the offense, mm-hmm. and they're helping him. And I think clearly, you know, Kevin Steele is still a master and he's doing an amazing job. And we have great coaches on that side of the ball. So I think part of it is he's made smart hires that, you know, where he's not just looking around going, who's the best recruiter I can get in the country? Maybe it'll fit in with me and the team or whatever. But he's been really good. And I think in particular, like, again, like Dillingham and Carnell, I think are really helping him be this person. because they take care of some of that other stuff. And I don't know. I just think he's – and some of it is honestly like maybe it's a growth and professional development thing where he's kind of – he went through this phase and said, if I ever get a chance and I'm in charge of the, you know, the offense again, this is how I'm going to do things. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think that, yeah, I think plugging himself back into the process in such a big way has got him re-engaged and re-energized. I think you're right. That probably is, if not the heart of it, it's very close to the heart of it for sure. I think that Carnell probably is having a good impact on rotating the running backs, and we're seeing them use them every week more and more in a smart manner where you don't just – it's kind of ironic. We were talking on Twitter today about how, you know, some – there were some games where Carnell got 40 to 45 carries. So he knows all about not running a running back into the ground because he was, you know, by Tuberville. And his running back coach, what's his name, that's up at Kentucky, I think, now, wherever. But, yeah, so he knows. So that's good. That's good. The offense, I want to talk about a little bit. Bo Nix is really coming into his own. I don't think that's a news flash to anybody, but he just looks better every week, doesn't he?
He does. I mean, again, we said it last week. More time with the receivers will get us a better-looking Bo Nix, and that's what happened. He had a bunch of practice time with them in the last 2 weeks, and you could see it. The growth is there. They got the timing better, and I think they're figuring out what works for him and what works for the receivers. And he, but also, like, he's still a freshman. You know, getting reps in the game against live defenses, he's learning from those things. And he really – I mean, he – played Saturday night in a way that showed us kind of the, you know, where he can be as a quarterback and where he can go, and it was awesome.
He's got so many places he can put the ball. I mean, there's so many different weapons, and it's funny because we have a whole, I mean, there's not a single one of them. That's the thing that's always kind of held us back, is we have, you know, if like if it was a deck of cards, we don't have like three ace of spades out there, but we've got some jacks, some queens, a king or so, maybe, you know. And the trick is not to just wear one of them out too much. It's that we distribute it around the tens, the jacks, the queens, you know, and use them in creative ways that equals up to having, you know, that much firepower. And I felt like Bo could have gotten the ball to Seth Williams almost every play of that game if he'd wanted to.
100%. And at other times, we might have done that. Gus might have done that. Yeah. But I think that's what we're talking about, this kind of new influence where they're being smarter about it.
Yeah.
They're distributing the ball more. They're really spreading it around, the carries, the catches. The other thing that we really saw the other night that we haven't seen in a long time is this Auburn offense makes the defense defend the entire field. Like sideline to sideline at 30 yards down the field, we're going to make you defend every inch of that green grass. And if you're leaving a bunch of it vacant, we have guys that can get there and make you pay for it. So I think, you know, if you – that game the other night showed people, if you come up and you play to stop the run and, you know, you have anybody back, we're going to burn you. And we're going to do it again and again. And if you play way off and you play back, we can run the ball. And if you play too close and too much inside, we can run around the end and you'll never catch
them. Absolutely.
You know, Anthony Schwartz and those guys going around the edge. So it really makes defenses play, you know, very spread out. And that's going to, in the long run, it's going to just make the running game better.
Well, remember, the jet sweep for a couple of years there wasn't working at all. McCaleb was the master of it. And Ricardo Lewis could get you 8 or 10 yards out of it occasionally. But it wasn't working there for a while. It just shows you how Anthony Schwartz, I mean, and to a certain degree Eli Stove, but Schwartz too, it shows how being just a step slower makes that play not work very well. But if you have that extra step, man, it becomes a super deadly weapon. McCaleb made it deadly, and Schwartz is making it deadly.
He does. And Schwartz is he's the real difference maker. Like when he comes across the formation, the defense shifts. They move. Yeah. Guys are getting out wider, and everybody's focusing on him and where he is. And it really, we just, half the time, we can just use him as a big diversion, and it's really going to open up things for other people.
And if you don't believe they're spreading the ball around and spreading the carries around, all you need to do is look at who the leading rusher was in this game. Our mostly drop back pocket passer quarterback. I know he's a dual threat and all, but he's not Gatewood. He can run better than Stidham could, but that's not his main thing, right? He's not the Mississippi State quarterback. He's not Nick Marshall, and yet he was our leading rusher. That just shows you how, because I mean, if we had given all the running back carries to Whitlow, he'd have been the leading rusher even over Bo, right?
Sure.
So we spread them. We diluted the running back carries so much that the quarterback ended up being the leading rusher, even when he, you know. So that's just, it just blows my mind. Okay, we threw slants, John.
Again, we did it at A&M. We did it again last week. Something the Auburn fans have been talking about forever that we don't do, and we're doing it, and we're making defenses pay. And it's so again what I was talking about, like. That just that empty space where the linebackers are coming up to stop the run. We do a little play action, and it's going to be there. And I think, like, you know, we have guys in this team that, you know, that can get in that space and catch that ball and make other teams pay. And I think we're going to continue to do that.
The defense, absolutely another great game. I am concerned about you know, you can say, well, the problem is the secondary. But honestly, in some ways, the problem with the secondary is the pass rush, right? I mean, the one leads to the other. That's the one deficiency we really have right now, is that we're not able to put enough pressure on the quarterback. I mean, you know, Brown and all of our
Marlon Davis.
Yeah, Marlon. I'm trying to think, Marlon Coke, all of them, they're all able to get back there, but we don't have that one guy that's just disrupting and getting his hands on the quarterback every play. That can just every play beat his man. And so what do you think as far as that goes? Is that just how it's going to be this year, and we're going to have to just hope that we can get enough pressure up the middle and play defense?
I mean, Carl Lawson's not walking through that door, Vin. D Ford's not walking through that door.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
It's true. Patino is right.
So, you know, we got the players that we have. I think, you know, Steele and them will work on that. I think Big Cat Bryant's okay at the buck right now, but we don't have that guy. And we're going to play a team this weekend that's going to throw the ball against us. So we have to be able to get pressure on the other team's quarterback. And the only thing that I can say is that if the edge rusher guy doesn't become that guy, then it puts pressure on Derek Brown that he has to be Nick Fairley, that he has to come through the middle and destroy the double team and make the other quarterback run for his life.
Exactly. And I don't want Derek having to do that every play. I mean, part of his responsibility is being that big body in the middle to stop the run and the draw and so forth. I don't want him having to be a pass rusher from the middle, you know?
Well, and the other thing, you saw this in the A&M game, if we're not getting that pressure, we're going to start blitzing.
Yeah.
And we're going to start sending the linebackers or the safeties on a regular basis. And I think we may just have to blitz more than we have blitzed in the past. But I feel like we have, you know, fast, athletic guys. I mean, I think Pepo and Britz, those other guys can get there. McLean, they can make that stuff happen and make a difference when they're coming from the linebacker spot. And we've seen it with the safeties in the past, too.
Yep. Let's see. Anything else about the defense? We held their SEC's leading rusher to, like, 50 yards?
Yeah. I mean, Kylan Hill's, he's a really good running back, and we held him down. That was big. I mean, he's a really, really good running back, and I think you're going to see him have big games against other teams.
Yeah.
And the defense is – we do not appreciate this enough. It's 2019. We're in an era of offensive football where teams are getting, you know, 60 points and hundreds of yards a week, and our defense is out here – you know, dominating people and causing problems for them and imposing its will on the other team. And I haven't seen another defense in college football that looks like ours. I don't, you know, this doing what we're doing to people. So I'm excited about it. And I think, you know, there's a lot of it. We can make teams one-dimensional. We can cause them problems. And the biggest thing is, like, they tackle well and they're aggressive. Like, they were not going to, you know, way back. We're going to go after people and cause problems for them. And we did that right from the tee off against Mississippi State.
We certainly did. I special teams, the Anders hadn't had to even try a field goal in the last couple of weeks. But I wanted to ask you, we had a couple of plays there on special teams where we were given really good starting position on offense. And who was the special teams player that was responsible for that?
Christian Tutt.
Now, when he was a young man, he never thought he'd see people stand in line to see the boy king.
King Tut.
How'd you get so funky?
Funky Tut.
Did you do the monkey?
Born in Arizona.
Auburn. There you go. You knew it was coming. You knew it was coming. I've been saying all season I needed to get that, and I even got a little bonus. I got a little bonus for you.
Tut, dancing by the Nile.
Disco Tut.
The ladies love the style.
Boss Tut.
Rockin' for a mile.
Rockin' Tut.
He ate a crocodile.
You know, alligator this weekend.
He gave his life for tourism.
For college football. There you go. He gave his life for college football.
It's terrible.
I was very proud of that. Come on. Come on. It's funny. Well, it's not good.
I wonder how many people listen to this and didn't see that, you know, have never seen Saturday Night Live and Steve Martin
do that. But. There's people have no idea what they just heard. There are people in our listening audience that are like, where did he get that? But you know what we are, John? You know what we are?
Just two little country kids outside misbehaving.
Yeah, I had to get that one on, too. That was, now you may not know what that one was. Do you know what that one was?
I didn't hear it for sure.
Just two little country kids outside misbehaving.
That's us, man. Two little country kids outside misbehaving. That's from the Righteous Gemstones on HBO. That show is awesome. That's Danny McBride's new show, and it's hilarious. It's got Walton Goggins as Baby Billy. If you've been seeing on Twitter people calling themselves Baby Billy, whatever and all, that's Walton Goggins' character on there, and he and the lady sing that duet, which is like stuck in everybody's head now. It's stuck in everybody's head because it sounds like this.
Just two little country kids outside misbehaving.
And now there's people driving their cars off the roads now because I played that song 3 times. It's stuck in their heads. Ah, well, you know what we got to do at this point?
We can tell Van's feeling better because he's playing with the soundboard.
I'm feeling much better. I am.
Great new sound effect.
I said on Twitter a while ago, I was actually able to put my shoes on by myself today, and that was a big thing. So because when you put your shoes on, it means you're bringing your knees up, right, so that you can reach your feet. And bringing your knees up is not something you want to do when your stomach, again, looks like you fought Wolverine in the stomach area. So the fact that I'm able to bring my knees up and fold my stomach is a very good sign. Okay. At this point, before we transition to the upcoming game, the first thing we ought to do is find out the latest on – Jared sent me the this week's clip, and he said, here's the superhero analogy, or I guess the eagle update. So let's find out what's going on.
Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist from the Longbox Crusade Network with your Auburn superhero battles. This week we had the Mississippi State Bulldogs, and I'm going to give them the villainous moniker of Mysterio. Mysterio can pull the wool over your eyes and make you see things that aren't really there. And man, were those powers working with the referees. But that aside, that young quarterback from Mississippi State was also quite tricky and deceptive like Mysterio is. But I told you we were due for a power upgrade for our Auburn University Tigers this week, and we are going to be the ever-loving, orange-skinned, blue-eyed thing from the Fantastic Four. Very strong, very determined, rocky defensive hide. And while Mysterio can pull the wool over his eyes for a little while, eventually the thing is just going to keep coming, and he's just going to keep coming. And once he gets those thing mitts wrapped around Mysterio, which happened pretty early on, it is clobbering time. So congratulations to the Auburn University Tigers. We looked powerful, like the thing from the Fantastic Four. I'm really hoping this trend continues and give us power upgrades to like Hulk and Superman levels in the near future. Now let's check in with Pat and the Eagle. Everything's fine. They have become friends. Pat is all better, and I believe I see Pat and his family driving up to the studios right now. Yep, that's them pulling up. And there's his wife, and there's the kids. Hey, how's it going? And wait, that's not Pat. Oh my gosh, the Eagle has actually taken over Pat's life.
This Eagle is out of control, but another great job. Jared does such a great job of coming up with these character combinations. I could just never think of them like that. My strengths lie in other areas.
I did not see that coming.
No, that was good. That was good. Mysterio versus the Thing. I love it. It's clobbering time, Stretcho. All right, so let's see. It's time for I don't have a sound effect for this. I need to come up with a sound effect for this, but it's time for our SEC Power Poll for this week.
And I say you.
So we're gonna thank the patrons who voted in the Power Poll. So if we rank the SEC teams from 1 to 14, and so the bottom tier at not a big shock. From the bottom up, Tennessee, Arkansas, Vanderbilt in the very bottom tier. Then kind of a lower tier of Kentucky, Ole Miss, South Carolina. And then kind of a middle group, Mississippi State, Missouri, A&M. And probably Florida falls into that tier also. And then kind of the top tier, Georgia 4th, Auburn 3rd, basically tied with LSU and Alabama at the top. So interesting.
Yeah.
You know, Auburn is moving on up there.
Well, I think we've got to see the top teams play some bigger competition. Auburn's played some bigger competition. But, John, Ole Miss, I had Alabama people on Twitter Saturday morning saying that Alabama was about to beat Ole Miss by 40. They did not. I mean, they put some points on them like we would expect, but Ole Miss scored like 35 points or something crazy on Alabama. What are we to make of that?
We'll get there. We got questions about that,
all right,
too.
Good. All right, well, we got to pause to thank our patrons that make our show possible and keep this show on the air. As I said, we're up to 91, which we super, super, super appreciate, because as I was telling John before the show started, our bills roll in and it just goes right back down again. So I really want to get up over 100 patrons by the end of the season if we can. We were at like 89 yesterday. We're at 91 today. That's good. If we get to 100, we're going to do a drawing and give out some prizes among all of our patrons. We'll send you cool stuff. But we do need that. So go to www.auwishbone.com and just click on the Become a Patron thing. It'll take you right to that Patreon site, or you can just go to the White Rocket page, or just go to patreon.com and search for White Rocket or VamplexGo or whatever, and it'll get you right there. And for as little as $1 a month, you can help keep our programs going. And we always like to thank the folks that are doing that, because you guys make this possible. So we always want to start with Brendan O'Dwyer. We got Matthew Flowers, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, and Carl Von Drunker up at the top here. And then Trevor Johnson, Phil Amthor, Winston Boddy, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, and Richard Stevens. You folks are awesome. We got a couple of new ones here. AU Falling Up and Trading Alchemist. Cool. We've got Ross, Kevin Smith, Clarence Alford, David Hegler, Robert Mendenhall, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, and John McCune. I take a breath. We got Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, and Joel Beckham. Kevin Kenoy, Spanky, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, and Dave Powell. I got a couple, some more new ones, Stephen Wyatt, Auburn Elvis, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Brandon Smith, Thomas Brinson, David Smiley, Jeremy Minton, Lane Middleton, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland. We're on the final home stretch now. Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Reigns, Nicholas Gregg, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Brent Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, our one-time and occasional donors, including Surfer Chickify, and all of our anonymous donors. Thank you all so very much. As always, if you didn't hear your name mentioned there, that just means that somehow I didn't get the communication from Patreon, so just drop John or me a line in email or Twitter or however you want to do it, and we will add you on there and get you on that list. All right, now let me see if I can find, I'm going to get off of that page. Be sure to, yeah, so again, www.auwishbone.com. Tell a friend about the show. I've been publicizing it on various Facebook groups lately, and our audience is always bigger when Auburn's doing well, so we're doing very well right now, and that's good. So auwishbone.com, tell a friend, and we are posting various bonus content for our patrons. I'm going to be continuing to post some of the panels from Dragon Con. I'll also be at Archon this coming weekend, and I'll have a couple of really cool panels I think a lot of you will be interested in that I'll record and post those too. We usually put them up a little bit early for the patrons, and then they go out later on for the public. We did a new podcast yesterday on the Auburn football rivalry, which again will go up Wednesday night, Thursday morning. And so you get and then a whole bunch of other stuff. You get to be, John will send you the power poll every week. You'll be in our NCAA basketball tournament pick'em thing coming up in the spring. You can be in our Fantasy Formula One League. Oh, I needed to give a Fantasy Formula One update. The top five right now is currently being dominated by Mira. Mira's team is number one. I am teams 2, 3, and 4. And Mira's, I think her Del Taco Racing team, it just kills me, is number five. And then Alan is in there somewhere, and a couple of our other patrons are in there in the top 10. I don't have it in front of me, but it's a really fun season, and it's very competitive. So we got a lot of things people participate in when they become a patron. I also, before we get back into business here, want to give a shout-out to everyone on the AU Wishbone's favorite meteorologist. We love you, and we're thinking of you and hoping everything goes well for you with things that are going on health-wise. I know what you're dealing with, so we're with you, brother. John, Auburn does not play a home game the entire month of October. What the heck?
It's a crime, Ben.
It's bizarre.
Again, it's bizarre. It's a weird fluke of the schedule. It's tough on the team. It's tough on the fans to go, I mean, a long time. But also, like, you know, home games in September are brutal because it's so hot. You want to have a game, especially as you get later in October. That's when it starts to get pleasant to go to games. So it's tough going a long time without home games. But it sets us up where we have a lot of home games down the stretch, and that's not a bad thing. But it's 35 days from Mississippi State till the next home game.
That's crazy. So our November schedule then is obviously Alabama, Georgia, Samford are in there. Who else do we have in there? Is it Ole Miss or Arkansas? I guess we're going to Arkansas, aren't we, before we go to LSU? I think that's right.
We have a home game with Arkansas the week after we play LSU, and then we have a week off, and then we have Georgia, Samford, Alabama.
That just seems like too many weeks for not to have a game in October at home, but okay. All right. Well, let's look at Florida real quick. We haven't talked about Auburn playing Florida before on this podcast, so What do we know about the 2019 Florida Gators? Because I actually fell asleep trying to watch some of their Towson game or whatever. But, I mean, they're not they're not the Urban Meyer Gators. They're not the Steve Spurrier Gators. They're not the Muschamp Gators. What is this team? Are they more like a Mississippi State team from a couple of years ago with Mullen? Or what should we be looking for?
That's fair. I mean, they're a good team. They're solid. They're a Dan Mullen team. You know, I think a big thing with Florida is I don't think they've really played anybody. I mean, opened in that, remember that week zero game against Miami?
Yeah.
And they won. And their other big win is against Tennessee, who we think is terrible. And that was an ugly, ugly game. Even they beat Tennessee solidly. It was ugly on Florida's side, too. And other than that, they played whoever, Towson and somebody else bad. So I don't think that we know a lot about them. I think that, you know, Kentucky was the other team they played.
Yeah,
they played
and Kentucky should have beat them. Kentucky should have beat them.
And that was a Kentucky team playing their backup quarterback. You know, their starting quarterback had got hurt the week before. And so Kentucky played their backup quarterback. And then Florida's quarterback got hurt in that game. And then they played this guy Trask, who's now the starter. And, you know, he's a different kind of player, especially for a Dan Mullen kind of team. I mean, he's a guy that's been there for a few years, so he has a good, you know, relationship with the receivers and stuff, but he's not a runner. He's a very accurate passer. I mean, he's been over like 70% in the recent games he's played. He has a good arm, but he's not like one of these guys that's going to, you know, go play in the NFL or anything. So I think he's a good, solid quarterback. He makes very quick decisions and gets the ball out quick. But he's, you know, not incredibly athletic. I think they're, you know, in terms of the whole team, their running backs are not great. They're kind of small. Their offensive line, we pointed out going into the season, has the least experience of any offensive line in the SEC in terms of starts coming into the season. And so they still do because everybody's had the same amount of starts since then. Right. And they've shuffled things around a bit. Their offensive line is not great. They have some good, talented receivers. They have a really good tight end. And we've had problems with that in the past, covering that kind of thing. They have a really good athletic tight end. Defensively, they're excellent. You know, the secondary is very good. It has some guys who are going to play in the NFL back there. And their strength is you know, pass rush. They lead the SEC in sacks and tackles for loss. They have this guy they got from Louisville, Greenard. And he's a really, really good edge rusher. He's probably the best individual edge rusher we've seen this year. And so I think, you know, Auburn has faced some teams that were tough kind of up the middle, but this is a different kind of thing where they're going to put a lot of pressure on, you know, Prince Tega and Jack Driscoll in terms of coming around the edges. Every Florida team, they're very fast. So it's, you know, a little bit like, you know, playing LSU or something. It's tough to get around the edge and run wide on them and have a ton of success. Although this Auburn team is, you know, faster than a lot of other teams are, so we may have more success than normal. But as you're a regular run, if you're Booby Whitlow, you don't want to just bounce out of the hole and go wide every time against this team. You're not going to get a bunch there. But I think that's it. I think that's kind of my basic thoughts. Their offense is, even with this Trask guy, they're not explosive. They're efficient. They make good short, accurate passes and get guys open and get first downs, but they're not getting big plays. They're not getting there. It's just not, like you said, it's not the Spurrier or Meyer offense where they're getting big chunks of plays. I think Mullen's kind of working with what he has, and what he has is some experienced, talented receivers and this quarterback, and they're just kind of making it up there.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at their schedule, and honestly, like you say, it's not as impressive at second glance. I mean, they muddled through that sloppy game where they won over Miami by 4, and they could have easily lost that game to Miami. They beat the UT Martin Skyhawks, or Auburn North. They should have lost to Kentucky. They beat Tennessee, who's terrible. and they beat Towson. That's it. So, so.
And again, and what do we know about, like, Kentucky, for example? They went the next week and lost badly to Mississippi State, and this past weekend they got killed by South Carolina. So they're not the same Kentucky team as last year, especially without the quarterback, and they lost the other guys after last season. So I agree. Like, I don't think this Florida team is nearly as battle-tested as Auburn. I think the biggest thing they have going for them is it's at home, and we're going in there. I think it's going to be much tougher environment to play in than A&M was. And I think the game plan, if you're Florida, I think the recipe for winning this game is simple. It's make Auburn turn the ball over.
Yeah.
And they're going to try to do kind of the short control passing game with Trask and these receivers. Like, again, you know, the kind of thing that's frustrating where we can't get a lot of pass rush because he's getting rid of the ball very quickly, and making, you know, short controlled passes within 10 or 12 yards of the line of scrimmage and some behind the line of scrimmage, a lot of screens and stuff, probably, you know, get the receivers and running backs out in space, get them to do stuff accurate and timing with the ball. And as a way to get rid of it very quickly before Auburn's defensive line could get there and cause problems for them. And then I think they're going to do that and then play really tough defense. I think they're going to be all over our receivers and stuff, and they're going to try and get in Nix's face and get him to force an interception or get the running backs to have a fumble or two, and that's their recipe to win.
Well, I was just talking about how their schedule has been up to this point, but look at this. The next four teams they play, Auburn, and then they go to Baton Rouge to play LSU, they go to Columbia to play South Carolina, and then they play Georgia in Jacksonville. So their schedule takes a sudden, very sharp turn after last week. You know, their preseason is over. Auburn, LSU, South Carolina, Georgia, bang, 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 bang. So that's they're coming up on the meat. Because after that, they've got Vanderbilt at Missouri and, of course, Florida State. So this right here, this four-game stretch, Auburn, LSU, South Carolina, Georgia, that really is the meat of their schedule. And we're the opening course, so it's going to be very interesting, I think, to see how that plays out. Wrong button. Okay, so what else are we need to know about this game? You said they're not explosive, 13th or 14th in terms of like plays. They're explosive plays. Yeah.
In terms of like plays greater than 10 yards,
okay.
That's their 13th to 14th in the SEC in that. So they're not explosive at all. They're kind of a dink and dunk down the field, you know, a few yards at a time kind of offense.
Yeah.
Pitts is the guy I'm worried about. It's funny, out of the guys in their offense, they have some, you know, guys that you've heard about, seen other games. So they have this young tight end named Kyle Pitts. I worry about him. He's had a couple of big games recently. He leads the receivers in touchdowns, and that's a guy, you know, we haven't played a good tight end yet, a really good tight end, and I think he could be a problem for us. That's something I'm going to be watching. I think the biggest thing is, again, we have to go down there and take care of the ball, not turn it over, not make any big mistakes. If we do that, I think their offensive line is a problem and hasn't been exposed because they haven't played anybody that was that good yet. I think our defensive line is going to chew them up, and I think we're going to eat their offensive line for lunch on Saturday. And the problem is, you know, can Trask get rid of the ball?
Yeah.
I think he's looked good against some other teams who weren't, you know, it's easy to look good against Tennessee's defense.
Right.
It's a different story looking at against our defense. So I think they're not going to be able to run the ball on us. It's all going to be on Trask. He's going to have to make the plays. And I think if we, you know, if he's having to move and he's having to, you know, he can't get set and get comfortable and get his timing and rhythm, that he's going to have real problems.
So we really need to go into this game like we did the last couple of weeks, trying to figure out ways to keep Bo Nix from getting sacked, right? They're going to bring a lot of pressure on him, you have to think, right?
They're going to be all over the backfield. So I think some of it's going to be, you know, him – again, what have we seen in the last couple of weeks? Him running the ball straight ahead.
Yeah.
Like, this is a big game for first down for both teams. We don't want to have Bo Nix in third and nine, you know, where they're teeing off on him. And they don't want to have Trask in third and nine, where we're, you know, bringing the house and coming after him and planting him into the grass. So I think getting, you know, 4 or 5 yards on first down where you're in a manageable position is really, really important. So I think your average yards on first down will be a big stat that'll tell you kind of at the end of this game at which team won. I think that'll be a big piece of it.
Well, historically, we've played well in that stadium. We've had our bad moments, of course. We've also had some really good moments. We talked about that on the other show this week, and you can hear that on Thursday, folks. So last kind of conclusions for Florida. I mean, I feel like we're going to win, but I don't know this Gator team quite as intimately as you, as what you've looked at. How do you feel as we get ready to play them?
I think we're going to beat them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I saw them play Miami. I saw them play Tennessee. And I watched some of that Kentucky game. And they're solid. They have some good players on defense. And they're going to cause problems for us. The offense isn't going to look like the Auburn offense isn't going to look like the well-oiled machine. But I think, you know, our offense has a lot of confidence coming out of that last game. And I think Nix has a lot of confidence. And I think we can, you know, do things. You want to take something away, I think there's other things that we could do to get you. If they want to be rushing upfield, then, you know, Nick's keeping it, running away from people, running upfield, break. And I think we're going to see more of like Nick's, you know, throwing on the run. They're chasing him. Guys are getting open, and he's throwing and making plays like that. So, or just Nick's running away and getting the first down. I think we're going to see that too.
Somebody pointed out that in the Mississippi State game, only one of Nick's passes was outside the pocket.
Yes. The offensive line did a great job. So I think that's something that, you know, we're going to see in this game. Can they protect him in the pocket? In the Oregon game, it was a real issue for him, but that was so much better in this game. So,
yeah.
The offensive line is playing well right now. I mean, they're really, really playing well, much better than they were a couple weeks ago. So that'll be big if they can protect him. And again, I think we figured out what kind of running plays work for them and work best for this offensive line group and for our running backs, and we're going to run those. So I think I feel good about it. I think it's two good defenses, but I think, you know, we have a better offense. I think between Nix and our, you know, the receivers or running backs we have, we can make more plays than they can. We just need to not lose it on offense by turning the ball over to them. That's the biggest thing. If we get on there, we don't turn the ball over, we're going to win. Yeah. I've no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're going to try to force us into mistakes. If we don't make too many mistakes, we should win the game.
That's it, 100%.
25 years, John, almost to the day, almost within days of 25 years that Patrick Nix took the Auburn Tigers down there and beat them in 1994. I was at that game. I was in the swamp, and the streak was supposed to die that day. That was we'd won 17 in a row, and that was number 18 in the streak, beating them number one Florida. Terry Bowden called it our Super Bowl, and we won it. And we won it running a play called Gator, ironically enough, a tight end pass. 25 years, how about that? All right.
So you have been in the swamp a couple times.
Yes.
How loud is it in there in this kind of game compared to other stadiums?
Well, the thing about the swamp, I was there in 90 when they were going bananas, when they were killing us. I was there in 94 when we beat them, and I was there in 98 when it was kind of a muddy slugfest, and they won like 24-3 in Terry Bowden's last game, as it turned out. And in all those games, what I observed is when they're loud, when they're on, that stadium is like a canyon. It's like a V down into the ground. Like if you're outside the stadium doesn't stand up from one end high up in the air. At least it used to. It's down in a hole, and so it's loud. And there's no track. You know how our stadium has that track around the stadium, so there's a lot of distance between the sidelines and the stands. Their stands are right up on the sidelines. I could have like thrown a rock and easily hit their receivers and our defensive backs you know, when I was sitting down low in 1990, I was like 20 feet from the players. So it seems louder than it has a right to be just because of the way it's shaped. But when they're not doing well, they get quiet like anybody, you know. In 94, that crowd shut up and cried and went home. So they, you know, I think you're right. I think if we jump on them, if we can get out to a good start and jump on them, that nullifies that crowd pretty well, just like at Texas A&M.
100%. That's right. The Texas A&M, the quick start, take the crowd out of it a lot of ways. That's big.
That's it.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
All right, what do we got?
Our first question is from he changed his email name to Paolo Paulo. He says, I know y'all weren't the biggest fans of Cam Martin, but I've always been a fan simply based on how humble and patient he has been. Do you feel any differently since Gus has been using him in a bit more, putting him in some good positions? Love the show. Oh, it's Paula Polo. Paula.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I like him, and he's a good guy, and from all indications, and I do feel like in the right offense and used in the right ways, he's a good weapon. But in the ways that we really need a running back to play most of the time, he's a bad fit. You know what I mean? I could see him on like a group of what do you call like the American Conference? You know what I mean?
Yes, I
could see him on one of those American Athletic Conference teams being a really good running back that in an offense that suited his size and his style, because he is explosive. When he gets through the line, he can take it to the house. There's no doubt, right? I mean, if he can get through the defensive line and pass the first linebacker, so he can get you a big chunk of change. The problem is a lot of the time he can't get through the line or past the linebackers. So what do you think?
I do think he's played better this year. I think he's being coached well. And I think he's doing a fine job as a steady guy to come in and give five or six good carries. Mm-hmm. And I think, like you said, he could, you know, one or two in there, if he could break and get us a first down, it's big. But I think he's playing better than he did a year or two ago, when I felt like, you know, he would lose yardage, or he would, you know, always try to, you know. Now he's doing that kind of just step one cut go thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I think it's much better for him.
I agree.
All right. Next question is from Wardam Wade. It says, do you guys think Gus has learned from his past mistakes, and are we seeing a different coach or style, or is this aggressiveness and lack of predictability on offense the influence of Dillingham? Either way, can it continue in the tougher games we have upcoming?
Well, everybody always wants to look and say, oh, it's that new guy that's solved all the problems. And maybe that's true. My personal explanation in my own headcanon, as they say, is that Gus was – he was in the Holy Land, and he was walking from Jerusalem north. He's on the road to Damascus, and the light shined down on him, and the voice said, throw the slant. And the scales fell from his eyes, and he went on to Damascus, and he coached us much better. Yeah, I think he really had a moment, I think, in the off season where he decided, I've got to change some things, and he has. So, and I don't think that. Yeah, I think Cadillac, like you said before, I think Cadillac has helped. I think Dillingham has helped. Somebody made a good point, probably Brandon, one of them, that Dillingham is almost like his grandson in a way, through that coaching tree, you know, through Norvell and everything. Yeah. And so he can say things that other coaches maybe couldn't, and Gus will listen to him. And so this is all conjecture, but you got to think that maybe, you know, Dillingham has said, hey, coach, why don't we do this? This might be a good idea. Like, let's make sure that, you know, they're gonna come after Nix. We need to make sure he's not standing back there holding the ball, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, but also, like, you know, Norvell is kind of a Malzahn disciple, but he's evolved the offense in different ways, especially in the passing game. And I think so. It's like Dillingham brought that evolution into the Auburn program and kind of we went back to the source code and updated it with this this upgraded passing game. So I think that it was a good in that sense.
So so Rhett Lashley was like Windows 3.x and
but yeah, I don't want to say this now. I don't know if you've noticed Rhett Lashley is the offensive coordinator from SMU, and they are kicking butt.
Yeah, they are. Well, yeah. Well, he was also the offensive coordinator of the 2013 Auburn Tigers, John, and 14.
All right. Our next question is from Ben Spooner.
Yep.
Who says, guys, if Auburn finishes up undefeated to the playoffs, could you argue that this is the best team in Auburn history? In order to be undefeated, we'll have beaten four top 10 teams the regular season, three of which are probably in the top five. Additionally, we'll face three of the top five teams in the SEC championship through the playoffs, not counting Oregon, which was 11 when we played them. Has any team faced and won a gauntlet like that?
Man, I have a couple of responses to that. One, I look at that schedule he just described and...
What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
And then he talks about, you know, going undefeated with this schedule.
Smoke weed every day.
And maybe that's possible. I don't know.
Enjoy every day. Enjoy every game. You know, enjoy every moment like of that Mississippi State game. Don't waste it looking ahead, going, oh, down the road, it could be great. Enjoy the moment.
Yeah, that's let's stay contained within our box and we'll take it. We'll take it 1 week at a time.
We're going to try to be focused too. So
we're going
to
take it one game at a time. Yeah.
All right. Our next question is from Auburn Elvis.
Hey, we got to get better at celebrating.
Yes.
Okay. Auburn Elvis says, remember last season?
Wait. All right, that's what you're wanting to hear.
Yes, thank you. So he says, remember how last season and how you would advise Auburn fans after tough losses to keep things in perspective and do some non-football things during the weekend? So what advice do you have for folks now that Auburn football is making us happy again? That's a good question.
Well, just enjoy it. Like you say, I mean, but stay in our box. Let's just focus, you know?
Number one, keep doing what you're doing, okay? Whatever you as a fan are doing, it's working. You keep doing it.
Yeah, it's all because of you, fan.
Well, I'm just saying, whatever's working for you as an individual, keep doing it. But I also think, like, it is healthy to get out of the house on the weekend and breathe some fresh air and do some different things.
And then if everybody does their thing, then we might end up in the
playoffs. Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
And I say you.
All right. So, all right. Next question.
Next question is from Rusty Owens, who says, based on what you have seen over this five games, are there any teams left on the schedule that scare either of you and why? So this goes back a little bit to Alabama.
That there's two units that scare me. I'll put it that way. And that's the LSU offense and the Alabama offense. I'm not scared of the Alabama defense. I'm not really scared of the LSU defense. I'm not scared of anything to do with Georgia yet. Now, if Georgia comes out and beats Florida 70-0 or something before we play them, then yeah. But right now, the only two units that really make me go, oh, Lord, I don't know what we're going to do, are LSU's offense and Alabama's offense. And that's just because they're passing game, really.
That's fair. I think that's 100% fair. I think that's the right way to look at it. Those are the two things that we've seen that are really scary. And I think the difference in those two is one of them we get at home and the other one we don't.
That's right.
And we, again, you talked about the kind of the leveling up piece of the schedule. we're going to see a team this weekend that wants to throw the ball on us.
Mm-hmm.
How will we deal with that? And again, they're not the last team that's going to throw the ball on us, but we're going to learn some things about this team and how what we do when teams want to throw the ball on us to have success.
That's right.
Next question from Dave Brown. He says, is it safe for our quarterback for the O-line just to be frozen on these offside plays? I'll hang up and listen.
I don't know. I know exactly what he's saying, and I don't know, honestly. I'm not sure what they're trying to accomplish there. Just run the play.
I think they're trying to make it easy for the refs, but he's already thrown the other team's offsides. I feel like they're already throwing the flag. The big thing is we got, you know, you want to try to do something that has a lower probability of success because you're getting the free 5 yards. So there's no point in just going for 1 yard. You should throw the ball down the field, and if it's intercepted, it's offsides. You're right. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's the biggest thing. All right. Our next question is from Barcher Summerhouses, which is, at Remote Orb on Twitter. And he says, is the stat comparison between 2013 Nick Marshall and 2000 Bo Nix insane, crazy, or nuts? And could this team be better? He says the defense almost assuredly is. Have you seen the Bo Nix, Nick Marshall stat comparison?
Yeah, Bo is like ahead, right? Right now.
No, but their stats are almost exactly the same at this point in the season.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I mean,
well,
and I think maybe Marshall had a more rushing yards, but more rushing attempts, and Nix has a better like touchdown interception ratio.
Yeah. Well, Nick hadn't started blowing them out yet, like when he went to Tennessee, you know, and stuff like that. So, or Missouri. I think Nick Marshall had the better upside in the rushing aspect, but I think that Bo's got the better upside in the passing aspect. Though they're both good at both, you know, and so it's just kind of a balance. It just kind of balances out. But I don't know that I would say, yeah, definitely the defense is better, although that team had a pass rush with D Ford.
And that team had a better offensive line.
Yes, it did. But this team has a lot more, you know, it's kind of like what I was saying with the weapons. That team had an ace or two and some tens and eights. This team has a whole lot of jacks and queens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different, they're just different. Which we'll find out which is better, but they're just different.
Yeah. But the defense is definitely better. Our next question from Matthew Flowers, beyond what you've discussed, what would you say is the important thing to take away in a blowout like this? It can be hard to know what to celebrate beyond just a big win.
Well, I think we've already talked about it. It's the team's improving. They came out and put their foot down on the throat of the other team immediately. They didn't let up. They didn't coast. They kept pushing, and they got the backups a lot of playing time in the fourth quarter.
That's it. And I think, we had seen, you know, Bo Nix struggle with throwing the deeper ball. And he had a lot of success throwing the ball further than 20 yards in this game.
That's right.
A lot of success. And I think we saw, you know, we had seen him being kind of inconsistent throwing the ball, like to Seth Williams, for example, where this game they were 100% on the same page.
That's right.
And they were kind of locked into each other. So I think it's using the whole field. And I think Bo Nix, like you said, in the pocket had not been very comfortable, was very comfortable in this game, you know, staying in the pocket, setting his feet, throwing the ball on time. Mm-hmm. To the receivers in the right place. So I think that was the big thing we could take away from it. Mississippi State is not bad. I mean, this is the thing. Like, we beat the crud out of them because we jumped on them and kind of the avalanche kept coming. But they're not a bad team.
No. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
Go ahead.
I thought what you made a point there was really good. I wanted to echo was I thought that Bo Nix technically had a very good passing game, not just in terms of the numbers, but he did the technical things a quarterback needs to do to be successful with his feet, with his body, with his hands, everything. I thought that was impressive. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're right. That was big. And I think the other thing is, you know, part of a football team is the belief or kind of the confidence. They can't just, you know, think, oh, we have all this potential. They have to actually do it sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think this team has done it. Again, that was the most dominating performance against a conference opponent that we've had almost ever.
Yeah. First half for sure.
Exactly. So I think, you know, that kind of playing that kind of game against a good team, again, Mississippi State's not a bad team, is going to give you this team a lot of confidence down the road when they're playing other teams that we can do this thing. We're really good. And the other thing is I think the kid Schrader from Mississippi State's a good player. I think he's going to cause problems for SEC teams the next couple of years. We're not going to be the only team that he gained some yards on running and throwing.
No. All right.
So that's the big thing. And I think the other thing I would say is we had seen a pattern in the first few games of the season of Auburn starting slow on both sides of the ball.
That is right.
And that pattern has been reversed. And the other area of improvement that I want to point out real quick, again, we saw in this game, is we had the punt return issues in the first few games. And the last several games, zero punt return yards.
That's huge.
It's gigantic.
It's flipping the switch.
Mm-hmm. So, but again, it's identifying areas where we need to get better and getting better.
Mm-hmm. You know, John just says, I see three more times we could be on CBS 230 this year. That's crazy. We've already been on once. We're going to be on again this week. And then LSU, Georgia, and Alabama. Man, you know, the Cam team was on like almost every week once he got rolling. But that's crazy. All right, last question or two for us before we run out of time here.
That's it for questions.
All right. Well, let's see if we want to just quickly take a trip. And I got to revive something.
Let's take a trip around the SEC.
That I've forgotten to do all season. So we'll get to that in just a minute. So the Texas A&M-Arkansas game, we talked a little bit about this already. Your thoughts on that are, as I understand, that it's just that kind of a game and we shouldn't think, oh, no, our win over A&M on the road that we thought was so great is just an illusion. We should still feel good about that win.
It's fine. They're a good team. They're, you know, an 8-4, 7-5 kind of team that's going to finish whatever, fourth or fifth in the West. So they are kind of who I thought they were. They're a good team, solid. I mean, Arkansas is not good, but I think they're not as bad as they were against San Jose State. I think they really showed up to this game and played about as well as they could play.
And I think it's just also a good cautionary tale for us to not take Arkansas too lightly.
That's exactly right.
Which is good.
Good point.
Alabama, Ole Miss scored 31 points on Alabama. I know Alabama scored 59. They're going to score 59 every week. But what should I take from that? They only won by 28. Only by 28.
Again, Alabama could have scored more if they wanted to, I think, if they kept throwing the ball. The biggest thing was Ole Miss ran for like 240 yards on them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were starting this backup quarterback, this Plumlee kid or whatever, and he just ran right at Alabama again and again and again. And I think, you know, when they play some other teams, that's going to be a problem for them. And I know they're going to do a lot of work and get better at it. But right now, like you said, their offense scares me, but their defense does not scare me.
Yep. Let's see. South Carolina beat Kentucky. Man, Kentucky's just on a downhill slide into oblivion, it looks like now. Not good. South Carolina needed a win because it doesn't get any better for them. They got that schedule that's as bad as ours and A&M's. Vanderbilt won. Who cares? Florida beat Towson. I fell asleep watching the highlights of that game. If you fall asleep watching the highlight clip of a game, you know you got a problem with that game. Coming up this week, Georgia at Tennessee. I'm going to go ahead. I haven't done it all season, but...
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
Entirely in my left ear. That's weird. I need to make that stereo. Yeah, you got to feel like Georgia's just going to slap Tennessee silly, right?
100%. They're going to annihilate them.
It's not, I mean, it's one of those where you look at it and go, ooh, maybe... Nah, it's not even gonna, it's not gonna be Texas A&M Arkansas, is it? It's just gonna be
It's gonna be 48-3 or something.
Yeah. We really have the only does Alabama not even play this week?
Because they have a bye week. They play at A&M next week.
Okay, and A&M must be off too, apparently. It looks like half the conference is off. All I see is Georgia, Tennessee, there's Auburn, Florida, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, who cares? Utah State, LSU, well, that ain't going to be that pretty. And Troy at Missouri.
Au contraire, don't sleep on Utah State. Whoa. They're not bad. They're going to be a little feisty. Now, again, LSU may score 60.
To back this up.
Go ahead.
I mean, LSU may score 60, but I think Utah State will be a little feisty and score, you know, maybe like 60-30 or so.
I'm interested, just like with Ole Miss on Alabama, I'm interested to see how many points this kind of a team can put on that defense, because it's like first people were saying, oh, man, LSU's offense is great, which it is. Then they were saying, and I was one of them, saying, wait, but their defense is a little suspect here. Then there was the backlash to the backlash, and people were saying, well, that's not that bad. So now I kind of want to see, right? I mean, you know, if LSU's going to lose a game this year, it's going to probably be either a 70-60. It's either going to look like the Washington State-UCLA game last weekend that we talked about, like 67-63. Or it's going to be like Alabama holds them down to only like 35 and beats them like 38-35. Or we do, right? Something like that, depending. So, any thoughts on Troy, Missouri?
No, Troy's not bad. No. But Missouri's going to beat them.
Missouri looks like they're getting better.
They are. They got Kelly Bryant. I mean, they got some other good players. They're fine. There's, again, who's good in the East after Georgia, right?
Exactly. So
I think
Florida.
It's kind of this Florida, Missouri, you know, and then it's kind of a step down from there. So
it really is. All right. You know, the one thing I've been thinking about that we need to get back to is we haven't had any visits from the coach in a while. We haven't had any of our little skits and fun things that we used to do a lot, just mainly because with all the news and all the, you know, everything going on, hasn't really been time. I mean, our show tonight's almost run an hour and a half, so I'm glad we did go ahead and do that Florida history thing separately. You were made a good call on that, because this show would have been 2.5 hours tonight. So I think we need to wrap things up for now. I'm looking forward to playing Florida down in the swamp for the first time in a long time, and I think we both feel good about it, don't we?
We do. And I love playing Florida. I'm excited.
I'm excited. Let's get it done. All right, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.